Good morning, and thank you all for coming out on this holiday weekend, celebrating our Independence Day. And certainly a lot could be said about our country and independence and freedom. Which would be significant, but for now, what strikes me is more importantly, or not more importantly, but while many of us and many pundits, educators, talk about independence and freedom, and there's certainly very important. Buddhism has always talked about freedom and independence, but in a not so political a way, but I think in a way that still is incredibly relevant to those of us who believe that democracy, and for an individual to live freely, free of oppression, free of tyranny, free of injustice, and also free of hunger, free of violence, free of not having their basic needs, which nourish and support their sense of well-being, safety. All those things are incredibly important, but even though there are many political and economic and social reasons why may that has not arrived yet in our world, one of the reasons could be that the world is not made up of people who are personally free. I think a free, independent, democratic society is quite wonderful, but it needs people who can act wisely and intelligently and compassionately within that. And that often seems to be the missing piece. So last Saturday, we had a day of mindfulness here, and I taught from the sort of the 9th century great Chan Zen master Lin Chi. So that's like many centuries ago, a long time ago, a very different culture, country. And yet he talks about freedom and independence, what it means to be free. So I thought that was interesting, in looking over what I was going to share today, continuing teaching from Lin Chi, that those words arise. So here he says, people who study Buddhism should seek real, true perception and understanding for now. If you attain real, true perception and understanding, birth and death won't affect you. You are free to go or stay. Here's another one. What I point out to you is only that you shouldn't allow yourselves to be confused by others. Act when you need to without further hesitation or doubt. People today can't do this. What is their affliction? Their affliction is a lack of self-confidence. If you do not spontaneously trust yourself sufficiently, you will be in a frantic state pursuing all sorts of objects and being changed by those objects, unable to be independent. It is most urgent that you seek real, true perception and understanding so you can be free in the world and not confused by ordinary, this is a bad translation, spiritualists. It is best to have no obsessions, just don't be contrived, be normal. You who seek impulsively elsewhere You're always looking to others for your own hands and feet. Yeah, things like that. If you want to be free, get to know your real self. It has no form, no appearance, no root, no basis, no abode, but is lively and buoyant. It responds with versatile facility, but its functions cannot be located. Therefore, when you look for it, you become further from it. When you seek it, you turn away from it all the more. Free, freedom, independence. What do these words really mean? Not as concepts, not as ideas, not as dogma, not as things to argue about, fight about, but things that have real personal meaning. As you know, in the Buddhist tradition, going back to the Buddha, he clearly said, I teach a path of liberation. So these words are old. They predate modern societies and modern politics. 2,600 years ago, these words were used. Words like liberation, freedom. What do they mean? The Buddha said, one of the essential freedoms that he taught was to be free from suffering. What a wonderful freedom that is, to be free from suffering, to be free from ignorance, to be free from delusions, to be free from self and ego. To be free from attachments. So that word, again, is used, but used in a very personal sense. And so I think we could use this holiday of independence and freedom, celebrating it, a celebration of something that happened over 250 years ago, not 2,600 years ago, 250 years ago. So you can see in history, 250 years doesn't seem like a long time, does it? When we say this tradition goes back over 2,600 years. I'd like to talk with you this morning about freedom and independence. So freedom and independence in Buddhism, again, as I just said, can be looked at different ways. It has a lot to do with what we might call our conditioning. Right? The way each of us, and it's not only each of us as individual, but we could even say our society, our culture, you know, why we are the way we are. And obviously, in Buddhism, that word conditioning and unconditioned refers to a process that we could say begins in infancy, when our minds are unconditioned. They have no language. They have no thoughts. They have no concepts. That's our mind. It was unconditioned. Right? But over time, family, culture, society, education, experience, our minds became conditioned, right? By causes and effects, situations that we developed within. Is that clear? I mean, especially our families and all the stuff that happens in early childhood. But again, the problem is we don't know that. You see, because we get to be wherever we are and whatever age you are, and we think, this is the way I am, right? This is who I am, and my thoughts and my feelings and my beliefs, and, you know, this is me, right? Because it seems so real. It seems like this is who I am, because these are the thoughts I always hear in the mind, in my mind, so to speak, and this is my impulses, and this is my, you know, this is my whole framework. the whole framework, the way I see the world, I see myself, I see everybody in it, my beliefs, etc. I think this is me, they're mine, right? But we don't realize that's not true. We have them because we were conditioned to have them, right? And even if we think, well, no, I've rejected my parents' views, right? But then whose views did we take on? What was our... So again, we can go to a restaurant that has just one of those little one-page menus, you know, very few choices, or we can go to a restaurant that has pages and pages and pages and pages, right? And we can go, wow, lots of choices, right? So we can feel much freer, right? Because look at all these choices I have. But we're still choosing from the menu, right? We're still making our decisions in terms of the possibilities that we have been offered, right? So even when we think we are often breaking out of our conditioning, we are just adopting a new form of conditioning. Is that clear? And that's not a statement that is about good or bad, right or wrong. It's just a statement about how we have developed. And so it is considered intrinsic to sort of spiritual freedom is to be free of our conditioning. Now, to be free of our conditioning does not mean that all of a sudden all the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, beliefs, etc., ideas that we have developed over the course of our life, we have to get rid of, right? To be free is that we are free to what? To pick or choose. To respond or not to respond. When there is no freedom, we are driven by our conditioning. We react always the same way. But when we have freedom, we no longer are that because we see I can choose to react this way, to react that way, or not to react at all. I'm free. I'm free to respond or not to respond. I'm free to talk or not to talk. I'm free to act or not to act. That's a different kind of freedom. That's a freedom that comes from within. That's a freedom that comes from knowing oneself, knowing who and what one truly is. And that's a freedom that knows that the thoughts and feelings and perceptions that are rising in my mind that seem so real and true are not at all that way. They are simply the way I've been conditioning, and they are simply thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, and they do not have to be in any way deeply affecting me or controlling my behavior or my speech. Now, there is a process that gets us to that freedom, and that is our practice. So, Master Lin Chi, again, Master Lin Chi, he lived for about 50 plus years in the mid 800s in China, and he was considered one of the great lights of Chan, which is the word for what's we know the word Zen, but Zen is the Japanization of Chan. And Lin Chi, when he when his teachings and practices came to Japan, that was called Rinzai. So those you're familiar with, somewhat with Zen, maybe have known Rinzai, but Lin Chi was his original name. So he says, people who study Buddhism should seek real, true perception and understanding. If you attain real, true perception and understanding, birth and death won't affect you. You're free to go or stay. Now, when he says birth and death won't affect you, that's like code words. He's really talking about, because birth and death in the world of change are like the big ones, you know, it's because things seem to begin with birth and things seem to end with death. So he says, so he's picking the big ones that get our attention when he says birth and death. But he's really talking about all change. Because in truth, things are always burning. Things are always being born and things are always dying. Right? Every thought, it's born in our mind and then it dies. Feelings, born and dies. It appears and disappears. Coming together this morning, you know, we come, this event is born, it exists, and then we'll all go our separate way and then we could say, oh, it's ended. Right? Everything, every day, every thought, every feeling, every perception, our bodies, mind states, physical states, relationship states, historical states, you know, everything, sounds, sights, everything is constantly changing, impermanent, right? Everything just appearing and disappearing, right? Right now I've appeared to you, right now you've appeared to me. At some point, we'll no longer appear to each other, right? If you want, you could close your eyes right now, and I'm disappeared, right? That's how insubstantial this all is. Now, so this world of birth and death, he says, if you have true perception, understanding, it won't affect you. Why, if you understand clearly this world of impermanence, this world of change, if you really understand it clearly and you have true perception, which means you see it really as it is, it won't affect you because why does it affect us now? Why are we so affected by this world of change? Because we see it as real. And we want it to be a certain way, right? We want birth, but we don't want death, right? We're happy with some things that seem to stay around, but other things we want them to go away. And other things that have gone away, we wanted them to stay or come back, right? When they go one way, we're not happy. When they go the other way, we are happy. When we notice they're changing, things are changing in our body, things are changing in a relationship, we get scared or anxious, or we get angry, or we get frustrated, or we get despairing, and we get sad, right? If you think about all your emotional ups and downs, both on a daily basis, but also on an extreme basis, why do they arise? Because something is changing, right? Something that we thought was is no longer or is changing. Something that we wanted to come into existence hasn't. Something that we didn't want to come in existence has. Right? Can you see that? And so it's And therefore we have all these emotional reactions. All these different mind states arrive, which unsettle us, many of them, and cause us to act in many different ways that cause suffering to ourselves and others. Right? For some people, it's very overt, meaning they act out. They act out in their life, they act out with others, and they just kind of spread the suffering around as much as they can, unfortunately. But for others who aren't so acting out, they keep it within. But still, even if you keep it within, which is better than acting it out, it still can cause all kinds of internal emotional turmoil. The mind is not at peace. The heart is not tranquil. So, people who study Buddhism should seek real true perception and understanding. You are then and you are unaffected by birth and death. Unaffected by birth and death doesn't mean, you know, you're not going to die. Right? It means it's not this traumatic experience that some people won't even talk about it, or that we're afraid of or anxious about. And also all the changes that are going in life, they won't affect us. Doesn't mean the changes aren't going to happen. You see, that's the worldly response, right? All this stuff is scaring me, so what can I do to control it? So we're rushing around always trying to control the external world. Those things aren't happening the way they're happening. They're happening the way we want them to. So we try to control people and, you know what I mean, all that stuff. Because we just can't move with it in an intelligent, wise, insightful way. Or else we are doing what we do so well in this society. We find all kinds of ways to numb ourselves through drugs and alcohol and TV and the internet and shopping and eating. You know, we just find endless ways, because we don't want to deal with our own internal emotional turmoil, and we don't want to really discover what it is that's causing my emotional turmoil, which is just what Lin Qi in the 800s is talking about. We don't have real understanding or perception of what's going on in this life. So we can be in this life, but not be so affected by it. That's freedom. That's independence. But it's very personal, isn't it? Are there any questions about this? This may not be everybody's experience. Any questions or any? Don't be shy. Yes.
Talk about being affected or not being affected. That's very, difficult, because we are made of emotions. We are. That's part of you.
Really, what part is it of you? I mean, hold on. You just said this is who we are. We're made of emotions, and I'm looking at you. I see your body. Which emotion am I looking at right now? I mean, is your body made up of emotions? Okay. All right. So, I mean, what I see is your body. So that's what everybody sees is your body. So even though you just said we are made up of emotions, you immediately go, oh, but not my body. Okay. So there are no emotions. We can't find them there. If we did an autopsy on Sergio, we wouldn't find kind of emotions all running around in there, right? We'd get all your parts out there, do a complete autopsy, and we wouldn't find any emotions. Okay, so you say these emotions are in your mind.
Yes.
Okay. So where are they in your mind? I mean, if your mind is made up of emotions, they must be quite predominant right now. Where are they?
Relating myself. That's the self.
Hold on. We're within ourselves. So where is yourself? What? It's in your mind. Well, that's interesting. I mean, is it very heavy, your mind? Carrying all these selves and emotions around? How much does it weigh? And if we took out your mind and emotions, would you weigh differently before and after? So they can't be that heavy. So we have to be very careful. That's why true perception is so important. Because we talk this way. Wow. My mind is made up of all these heavy-duty emotions. But that's not true. Emotions just come and go. They're like clouds. Yeah. They cover the sun. But the sun is still shining behind the clouds. You just can't see it. Because you see the clouds and you think. And if you think the clouds are real solid things, then you could kind of get despairing, right, when it gets dark. But when you know they're just passing through this much vaster space and the sun is still shining, they're not so big. You are not made up. I mean, emotions are part of the human apparatus, but they're just one part. And they come and go, don't they? I mean, have you had one emotion nonstop since you were born? No. They come and go. They come and go according to what? Causes and conditions. Right? So we don't want to give them, we want to acknowledge them. But we don't want to give them power. When you go, oh, they're so big, so solid. Right? You know, I mean, you see how you've set yourself up for feeling, wow, this is beyond the ability of one poor mortal like myself to change, right? Because I got this big, heavy-duty emotion. That's what I am. That's not who you are. I mean, who is it that right now is telling me about his emotions? It's got to be somebody different than the emotions, because you're telling me about the emotions. So who's that? Does he have a lot of emotions too? He does too. I thought the other one has all the emotions. It's important that we sort this stuff out, Sergio. To really look deeply into our minds and our experience and to really see, what is an emotion? What are they really? See, the wonderful thing about meditation as a way to really understand is that this stuff can all be understood by all of us. We don't need a PhD in psychology or Buddhism, right? Because we're just looking into our own minds. So all of us, whether we're educated or uneducated, whether we're Buddhist or non-Buddhist or Christians or Jews, it doesn't matter. The mind's the same. And if we use the tools of mindfulness and concentration to look into our mind, which means looking into the nature of what is an emotion, right? And when emotions arise within you, why are they arising? What's causing them to arise right now? Why did this emotion arise now? And you'll see there are causes. And there are causes for positive emotions. And there are causes for afflictive emotion, right? So it certainly behooves us, if we want to be happy, to cultivate positive emotions. You know, loving kindness, compassion, patience, caring, right? These kinds of emotions create a state of well-being and openness. But if we're cultivating anger and fear and sadness and jealousy, you know, et cetera, et cetera, we'll have a very disturbed mind. And that's just cause and effect. Is that clear? So even in the realm of emotions, we can understand, if we see clearly, that there's a various range of emotions in life, and that, again, because of causes and conditions, and our childhood, etc., and the family we were raised in, and our life experience, and our own stuff, we may have, unfortunately, spent many decades cultivating afflictive emotions, right? So we're like professionals. Some of us are really experts at anger and resentment. We can do that really well, right? Just give me any opportunity and I'll just, some people are very good at worry and anxiety and fear. There's been many decades just cultivating that wonderful emotion, right? And are just, it could be a clap of thunder and we'll start worrying. It doesn't take much to get us, it could be anything. We could just be sitting here and find things to worry about in the future. And some of us, we cultivate sadness. We cultivate loss. We're always ruminating on what's gone wrong and what we've lost and what could have been. Right? You see what I'm saying? We don't realize that that's what we're doing. And we don't realize that we don't have to do that. That's freedom. See, come back to freedom. That's the freedom from suffering. Yes, do you have a question? Right, so this is, what meditation's about. Right, meditation, this is why in this path, and there are many different spiritual religious paths, but you see in the Buddhist path, meditation is so central, because if you see that the very sources of your suffering is your condition, which is manifested in thoughts and feelings and perceptions, and you want to begin to understand that and change that, you need a mechanism for how do I observe that? How do I see that? And that's what we're doing here. That's what we're learning this morning. First, we need to calm the mind, quiet the mind, and let it clear up a bit. And we need to learn how to concentrate the mind so we can focus on something with some degree of attention. And now we have a decent tool to begin to explore our conditioning, our thoughts, feelings, and perceptions, and to begin to, we have a real capacity to make change in ourselves. Right? See, the problem is there are many people, many, many more people than are here or practice Buddhism and all that, or meditation, there are many more people who are good people who want to change, who know they're suffering and want to change, but they don't have the tools. Right? Meditation is a tool. Self-awareness is the tool that allows us to see what's going on inside and gives us over time the capacity to change. To be free. Free of our suffering, free of our conditioning. Yes. Do you have a question?
Well, I understand how we cultivate the afflictive emotions, but when I think of the word cultivating, the boundless abode, I wonder if you could...
Cultivating the four? Yeah, again, cultivating means what? I'm very consciously growing something. I'm cultivating, right? So up to now, it's like we were given a garden filled with weeds, right? We didn't know any better. We grew up somewhere where all these weeds were considered, what you grew, right? That's what they grew in the family, and that's what they grew on the street in the neighborhood. So everybody was growing, right? So we've just gotten very good at growing weeds, okay? Cultivating, paying a lot of attention to, taking care of. We have been very good caretakers of our misery. You know, we will, you know, we'll wake up with it in the morning and we'll work it all day. Therefore, it will grow. This is cause and effect. Okay? So, one of the things we would hopefully learn to do is, you know, what kind of garden do I want to grow? Right? What is a real flower? Well, if sadness and anxiety and fear and anger and resentment and frustration and jealousy and ill will, you know, and hate, and you know, all this stuff, if these are weeds of the human mind, then what are real flowers? And again, you know, most religions, most spiritual path will teach us that. There, you know, love, compassion, understanding, caring, you know, all those positive qualities, right? Acceptance, right? So these are the things to be cultivated, because they produce a very different mind. And a different mind produces a different life. A different mind produces a different way of speaking. A different mind produces a different way of relating and have relationships with each other. And ultimately, a different mind will that is filled with these kinds of wonderful kinds of thoughts and feelings will create a better world. Right? The world is not created by anything other than human beings. Right? And if you have a bunch of human beings who spent their lives primarily cultivating weeds, when they get together, what are they going to do? You know, share information about cultivating weeds. That's what they do when they get together. Right? You know, from the top on down. But, you know, wonderful spiritual teachers, religious teachers, share something different, don't they? A different way of being, a different way of relating, a different kind of mind. So when you hear somebody speaking good words, be interested in what is the mind behind the words. Right? That's what we want. Many of us think, oh, it's just a matter of getting the words. So there are many people who have lots of good words, who can speak good words, but they don't have that mind state from which those words really come forth. So we want to be able to cultivate that mind of love, that mind of openness, that mind of acceptance. When that mind is cultivated, then the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, actions, behaviors, speech patterns will all naturally flow forth. Is that clear? And then we are free from suffering. And we can stand in this world independently. And again, there might be some people going, hey, I thought Buddhism was all about interdependence, interbeing. But that's a little different. That is certainly true. But here we're talking about us in our individuality. Can we exist in this world? Here, he says right here, it is most urgent that you seek real true perception, understanding, so you can be free in the world and not confused. This is very important too. You know, most of our fellow American citizens are just led around, right? You know how the ox, you know, they get that ring through and they're just, you know, it can be a big ox, but a little boy or girl can lead that ox around because, you know, it's right through the nose. And unfortunately, we are led around. We are led around by newscasts and broadcasts and advertising, and you know, we're just led around like sheep. We have no independence. We have no inner strength or inner understanding or inner perception that all these various types of messages we're getting, we don't have to be reactive to. In the same way with people, many of us are so affected by other people. Their thoughts, their feelings, their views, their dramas, you know, that we're always getting what? Sucked into them. People go afterwards, how did I get sucked into that again? You know, I can't believe I got sucked into their drama again. Right? Because we don't stand in a strong place within ourselves. Not a strong place that's kind of like a macho strong place. You know, it's a different kind. It's a strength that comes from knowing yourself, knowing who you are, knowing what's really of value, knowing what's really of meaning, knowing the way things are, knowing the way people really are, right? Then you can respond freely because there's a certain kind of independence in a good sense, right, that you have cultivated. And therefore, you can be in the world of all this stuff and not be affected by it. Right. I mean, you know, we're gearing up for another presidential election. Watch out. they even tell you it's spin. Right? I mean that's how sick it is. Let's see what kind of spin we can put on that. Right? I mean, do you see what I'm saying? It's just out there. But they're trying to, what are they trying to spin? Our ability to see clearly what's going on. You see, and if your mind is free and clear, you can't be spun. Because you think clearly. You know, the Buddha himself said to his followers, he said, do not accept what I say because you love me or you respect me, because I'm the Buddha and, you know, I'm your teacher. Do not do that. He said, everything I have taught you, take it in within your own mind. Check it out with your own logic. Check it out against your own experience. And when you see that it is true, then practice it. Now, there's a man who had a lot of confidence, right? Most of our leaders don't want us to look too clearly into them and what they're saying, do they? There are even some people who say, hey, don't confuse things with the facts. Right on this. let's keep facts. Let's keep reality out of this. I mean, people talk this way, but we want our spirituality to be grounded in reality. This is not a metaphysical path. This is not a path that takes us to an alternative universe. It is this very life, both the individual life and the interpersonal life and the communal life, that needs to be transformed. Any questions about that? Please, if you're thinking a question doesn't sit right with you, please don't feel shy or embarrassed to challenge or to ask. Yes.
So they're talking about the independence.
Mm-hmm.
I still get kind of unsure on being a bodhisattva,
mm-hmm.
and assisting others, and then knowing kind of the reality of when it just doesn't feel right. But then also that just that conflict of this is what I should be doing.
Yeah, so just because there may be people don't understand our lingo, the word bodhisattva in Mahayana Buddhism is very, it's sort of like the ideal, okay? To be a bodhisattva. Bodhisattva means, it kind of has two meanings in one. It really involves a human being who sees very much that the most important thing in their life is their own waking up, their own cessation of suffering, their own transformation, their own enlightenment, but acutely aware of their interconnection with all beings, as it's called, all motherly sentient beings, they are also totally committed to being of service, to being of help to people who are suffering, and believe that the more awake I am, the freer I am, the better able, because of my own experience, to be of benefit to others in helping them. Is that clear? So that is the bodhisattva way that we are following. Now, the important thing to understand about that way is that is also a way that has lots of common sense, lots of intelligence. Okay, so it's not our classic do-gooder. That's not a bodhisattva. Okay, I mean, I'm not putting down a do-gooder. I guess it's better than being a do-badder. And I guess there are enough people in this world who are do-badders that it's good to offset that with a bunch of do-gooders. So that's certainly an evolutionary development. It's probably better to be a do-gooder than a do-badder. Again, some things are very simple, you know, in terms of benefiting people. I mean, if someone is hungry, to give them food. If someone doesn't have shelter, to give them shelter. If someone needs medical care, to make medical care. Right? If people don't have water, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So there's certain kind of helping or reducing people's suffering, right, that are kind of simple and obvious. And that should all be done. That's hopefully a healthy society is treating its members that way, as if we are all family, as if we are all interconnected in that way, and we have a responsibility to each other, okay, for the basics. But when we get into the personal suffering of human beings, right? The personal suffering that goes on in their minds, the personal suffering that manifests in their words, and the personal suffering that manifests in their actions of their body, right? It's a little more complex. What is helpful? Is that clear? And we all know that. Because we all know even changing ourselves, somebody who we know that well and have lived with our whole life, really getting at the root of our own suffering, seeing clearly ourselves and engaging in a real meaningful way of transformation, that's often kind of murky, right? And many of us over the years, if we look back, maybe somewhat shamefacedly or embarrassed to note, there were many decisions we've made in life where we thought we were being of benefit to ourselves and others, and it hasn't worked out that way. And that's just the truth. So we need to realize that a good heart is not enough. But we need a certain degree of good mind, good intelligence, good insight, to really know what would be beneficial in really helping somebody. I mean, does that?
Yeah, when you use words like common sense, I still think like my common sense is still based on my condition or my problem with that. So then you use common sense. I sometimes feel it's still got a layer of judgment because it's based on my own condition.
Yeah, so it's a process, right? You know, I think in one of the things I just read where he said, we need to, you know, trust ourselves, you know, have confidence. Well, again, I mean, if all we hear within ourselves are just a bunch of conflicting messages or thoughts or feelings or perceptions that we know have gotten us into lots of trouble before, this is not what he's talking about. He's talking about our true self, something deeper than our conditioning. And again, through the process of meditation and leading our authentic spiritual life, we will gain closer and closer connection with our true heart, our true mind, and our true natural intelligence. That'll help us. But I think, as you say, if we're not clear that we're hearing that message loud and clear, then we should be a little cautious. I mean, common sense implies what? I mean, how do we develop common sense? Which is a wonderful word. What is common sense? Common sense. Something that's common, which means it's kind of ordinary and kind of everybody can act, it's common, but it's good sense. It's kind of intelligent, right? Kind of an ordinary kind of intelligence that we have. Yeah, I think we all have that. The problem is most of us don't listen to it. Because common sense should be based a lot on experience. Not walking in traffic, right? After a while, it's just common sense. It's good common sense. Right? But you may have to have a couple of close calls early on to finally wake up one day and realize, yeah, probably walking in traffic is not the brightest thing. Right? So common sense is something that we develop over time. It's kind of a natural intelligence. It's really kind of wonderful. A lot of things are common sense. I think wanting to be happy is just good common sense. Wanting not to suffer, good common sense. Wanting to have a healthy body as opposed to an unhealthy body. See, there's a lot of things that if we just listen to our common sense, we would hear what? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many people would want a happy mind versus an unhappy mind? All in favor of a happy mind? All in favor of an unhappy mind? You see? That's see our common sense. Right? How many people would like to have a healthy body? How many people would love to have an unhealthy body? Right? Can you see? See, this is our natural wisdom. How many people would like their children to be happy? How many people would like their children to be miserable? Right? I mean, when I was a therapist and used to work with people in behavior change, you know, I used to work with chronic smokers, right? And I said, a lot of them were in their 50s and 60s. And I say, and they'd find out about their children and their grandchildren. I say, well, say they have a grandchild. I say, well, have you taught your grandchild how to smoke yet? And they look at me like a guest. No, I would never do that. I said, why wouldn't you do it? Well, I would never want anybody I love to smoke. Can you see? I mean, that's common sense. And yet, what are they doing? That's not common sense. Can you see it? So please understand, all of us have this common sense. In Buddhism, it's called our natural mind, our natural intelligence. The problem is we've grown away from it. We don't trust it. We don't hear it. We're lost in our obsessions, our self-indulgences, our need for short-term gratification, right? And we don't do what's common. I mean, for example, how many people here would like, if they're in a relationship with somebody, would like it to be harmonious? How many people opt for conflict and constant emotional turmoil? Anybody want? There's nobody wants it. See, common sense. See, we all have this wonderful common sense. And yet we don't listen to it, do we? Is that clear? Good. Any other questions about this? Good. So, we'll stop here.